I thought we could discuss today how you think the whole situation of desire arose in the first place. You can't deny the fact that you have desire. So therefore, now, why? How did it come into being? What is it about you that has a desire? It's like a lump of chemicals suddenly has desire after billions of years of random interactions. Why desire? This is another way of heading into the deep water and trying to get at the root of existence and understanding the root of existence. But why desire?
Pleasure of the senses.
Why?
The growth of ourselves so that we know what we want to be doing a lot.
Well, not analyzing where you're growing to and what constitutes growth. Why is there this? Why desire?
Well, we desire to live.
Why? So,
well, because of, I suppose it's, yeah, I'm not sure it's intrinsic, isn't it? I don't know, because like a baby, it cries and wants to be fed, and then it's contented when it's fed.
Mm-hmm.
So.
How do adult babies cry?
Yeah.
What do the adult babies cry for?
Food.
That's
why.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why? Why this desire? Why do you have desire? Why do you want things?
Mm-hmm. It's so that I'm longing. You don't have something and you want it to survive.
Why?
Why?
Why do you desire?
I think it goes back to survival techniques maybe in the beginning, because every living organism desires to keep on living or to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one would probably be, you know, taste, or not even more basic than that, just actually feeding yourself for survival. And then the desires come from that.
What desires come from that?
Well,
see, should I understand what you mean?
No,
like,
maybe,
yeah. Like, say the basic need is food for survival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then maybe you need something a little bit more extravagant than just food. You need a buffet and feast.
Mm. Okay.
So you're talking about eating, packing the belly.
Yeah.
All right. So then, I mean, animals, they also do that. Plants.
Yeah.
They move toward the sun.
Yeah.
So, all right. Okay, that's one desire for the, you know, for eating. What else?
Procreate.
Why? I mean, do you like wake up every morning and got to procreate?
Procreate.
No, you don't. That's not something. That's something originally.
No, that's
what you want to feel. Like. Might be what it feels. Okay, eating, you mentioned. Mating. Mm. What else? According to the Vedic viewpoint, there's four propensities that human beings share with animals.
Mm-hmm.
Eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing, offending.
Okay.
So, what would be special about human desires then?
Do animals not have the desires that humans have?
The animals eat, yes. Mm-hmm. They sleep, they mate, they fear.
Mm-hmm. Ours are more complex.
Mm-hmm.
Our desires are more for to getting to know ourselves when we're not just for the survival of our own kind, you know? They get a bit more.
No, animals are not simply interested in survival, they also like gratifying their senses.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't you noticed?
Mm-hmm.
You ever see a horse galloping in a paddock?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they like to feel their hair, their mane flying, you know? You ever see that?
Yes.
They just run and then they stop. They run again the opposite way. They actually like the feeling.
Yeah.
You ever have cats rub up against your leg?
Mm-hmm.
They like the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not simply, you know, survival as like, you know, not getting any kind of stimulation. Animals, you know, and human beings have their sense gratification.
But don't we need more external gratification than what animals do?
Like what? What do you call external gratification?
Well, like a house, you know, and a proper house, say, then a car, then we, you know.
Well, animals have houses too. They nest.
Yeah.
It's like in Australia, the bowerbird. You know about that?
No, the bowerbird, no.
Don't know about the bowerbird.
Sure
enough, they cook about
the bowerbird. Your life is half wasted. Where in Australia are you from? You don't know about the bowerbird.
No, actually.
It's a bird. Mm. It's blue, and it loves blue. Not, more like purple.
Mm.
And it, the female, she fills up her nest with bluish, purplish things gathered from far and wide.
Brilliant.
Yeah, like whether it's watch straps, any piece of paper, anything of that color. And why did she do it?
Attract the male.
Right. Exactly. That color you have on, the bowerbirds like it.
Okay.
So she loads up her nest with that kind of color, knowing that the, you know,
he'll come along.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a house.
Mm.
And then you attract the man. So what's so special about having a house?
No.
Now, granted, a human being probably has more of a mental sense of ownership.
Yeah.
That's a fine point, though. You know, both are nesting.
Yeah.
Just like even ladies, they start, you know, they commonly say amongst themselves when they get to their late 20s that, you know, I'm starting to feel like I want to nest, right?
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
After running around and traveling and this and that. Nesting time comes. And that's when they usually say to their partners, you know, maybe we need a few little birdies in the nest. And the partner kind of, oh, blah. I thought we were just a fun loving couple. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But then the partner's got to calculate, you know, how much am I attached to the facilities I'm getting? Is it worth it? You know, should I take a plunge? Or most of the time they're caught. They don't want to give up their habitual pleasures, so they figure, well, what the heck? Especially these days, there's no intense commitment to parenthood, so you know, the guys figure, hey, I'm not going off. You know what happens, you know? We could say, keep the peace. Right? Like that, right?
Depending on what you do as a father.
So, there's nothing so great about human beings having a house. What else? What is special about human desire?
Money. It's all about earning and spending money.
But the money is a means to get something.
Mm.
Although, granted, some people feel a mental
thing. Yeah, well, it is all a mental thing. I mean, money is a human invention, something divine, it's been passed down.
But mainly money is for getting things.
Mm. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
It has no purpose unless it's living. As a material thing, it's, you know, it's for free paper and material.
So the money is used for eating, sleeping, mating, depending. Whether you have a big mansion or a small flat.
Mm-hmm.
So how are human desires different? Suppose, you know, suddenly you were face to face with a cosmic destination mechanism. You were told, okay, justify yourself now as a human being or take the animal body. What would you say?
Spiritual.
So how would you have to justify yourself? 5 minutes. Justify your human existence or take the animal birth.
Could you choose which animal?
You have something you're fond of?
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, I think it'd be quite good to be a cat or a horse.
Why is that?
Oh, I don't know. I just think cats are... They have quite a crazy life and they're quite intelligent and people sort of, I don't know. They're not man's best friend in a way, so, you know.
Yeah. They kind of make their own
rules. Even though they are owned by humans, they never class themselves as being owned. They're one step above, really, humans in a way.
Yeah. So you wouldn't mind being a cat?
Mm. Oh. Or a horse.
Well, let's start with the cat. Why?
I think what I like about humanity is the mental capacity.
Mm-hmm.
The intellectual capacity, and that's what I think the animals really lack, because what they can do is they can reason and make decisions, certainly, but it's about the immediate situation and what we want in front of them.
Mm-hmm. You know? Like human beings today.
Yeah.
So basically what you're saying, it seems to me that what you're saying is that human beings are just slightly above, these days where they act slightly above the animal flag.
Yeah.
Because certainly, you know, the whole culture today is just geared on gratifying itself
at
the present moment or a few moments in the future.
Yeah.
Yes, basically you point out the tragedy that human beings today have failed to understand their advantage over the animals, and they're more and more reduced to just focusing on their immediate bodily demands.
But I mean, I think there will be always those of us among those people among us who are, you know, particularly gifted as architects to build the systems that these other people are living within. And often this sort of the money and the financial thing is used as a guy riding a donkey with like a carrot in front of his nose.
Mm-hmm.
And like the donkey just follows the carrot, you know, as a means to of attraction.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The thing is that the donkey's not getting a satisfaction out of it, it's just a servant for the guy riding it.
Mm-hmm. So the animal's a servant. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Certain animals. In the same way, money can be used to enslave people.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, well, how would you, once again, you're facing your change in body, how would you justify yourself as a human being? No, I don't want to be the, you know, cat, of course, because...
Your imagination?
But how are we to know that the animals don't, also? You know, and how are we to know?
Well, they don't act out, we know that.
But that's, that might still be unkind.
Yeah.
You're having discussions like we're having now.
If they had great plans to create a new civilization, they're not going rougher, I don't think.
No, but, you know, animals are very social.
Hmm.
And the way they
About what?
Well, the way they live in groups, you know.
What's the purpose of groups?
Well, it's like a community. It's similar to how we live. Yeah.
True, but this is my point. What you're basically telling me is there's not much difference between human life and animal life.
Hmm.
I agree.
I don't think there is. And but, I think that's like, obviously that's why we're vegetarians.
Or look at it another way. That's why humanity is in bad shape today. Because they can't understand what are the special province, what's the special province of desire for a human being as contrasted to an animal.
Yeah, they have like a higher purpose and a spiritual purpose.
Right, right. So what is, where are the human beings' higher purpose, spiritual purpose? Deborah, I'm asking, how would you, like, defend yourself? No, I don't want to go into the animal body. I am a human birth, as it, you know. How would you justify it?
Saying that you want to be in connection with God or something like that.
Yeah, that would be true, but I mean, is that how, for example, you really feel? I don't know, not the animal, but I want to be in connection with God.
I would want to be in faith.
Okay. How would you justify your human claim for it? No, give me the human mind.
Well, I did say give me the human mind, because I mean, I think with an animal, a lot of its basic survival demands of that, that it must spend most of its concentration just to find its survival, just to search for food and so forth. Whereas a human being has solved a lot of those issues.
By killing the animals.
Right. In some ways, yeah. But I mean, also by building infrastructure like houses and services, warfare.
How human beings solve the eating problem, for example?
Yeah. We have, well, and certainly in this kind of society, Western, we take it almost for granted that we can have a continuous supply of food without any
Which is terrible, which is ridiculous, it's stupid.
But importing and exporting from here and there.
It's going to run out.
Well, did you know, for example, these statistics? How many for 1 hectare, how much? How many human beings can you give the protein they need for 1 year, or for 1 hectare? Just one human being.
Of 1 hectare?
Yeah, years worth of protein off of animal protein, flesh. That same hectare can give 40 human beings a year, the yearly protein needs from soy.
Yeah.
That same hectare can give 1,000 human beings their yearly protein off of spirulina.
Wow, awesome.
Yeah. So if you took half the landmass of the North Island and grew spirulina, you could feed 6 billion people.
So it's 1,000 on spirulina.
Yeah.
How many was it? 40?
On soy.
On soy.
And one on meat.
One on meat. See? Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. So half the size of a spirulina plot, half the size of the North Island could feed 6 billion people.
Wouldn't you need it to be watering? Because this is spirulina, isn't it? It doesn't grow.
We were just talking about this without going into the.
No, the fine.
Just
place.
Land.
Yeah, land mass.
Yeah. Half the size of the North Island.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Of course, you know, wealthy people say, I'm not going to eat spirulina every day. Some caviar, some lobsters, some veal cutlets, you know. So you see, it's all the tongue. And then people wonder, oh, the hunger problem in the world. If you want to see a meat-eating country, go to Argentina. As bad as their economy is now, even the poorest person gobbles down huge quantities of meat. Mm. That's just what they're accustomed to. Gaucho steaks and all that kind of stuff. That's just the standard of life.
Mm.
So therefore, I question whether human beings can even solve their material needs properly. Whatever they do has a great disturbance. Their eating disturbs the planet. Their mating disturbs the planet. Their fighting disturbs the planet. They're sleeping also, they need huge arrangements for sleeping. So even just from the material point of view, I see that human beings are failures. Then you look at the spiritual pursuits of human beings, and what's the use? How are the desires of human beings special? If they're simply desiring things in relation to the body, in a more complicated way than what the animals desire, or how the animals do. Pigeons are more successful at sex life, you know? Did you know that? Pigeons, what are they doing up in those trees? You don't know?
No.
30 times a day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I was like a
pigeon. Then you'd be satisfied, huh? No, well, like you say, like we're saying, there's different desires. There's material desires and spiritual desires.
So you opt for material desires like a pigeon, and then also some spiritual desires also.
I think you can. Well, can't you balance them both? We can't just be. We're not going to be fairies and just pretending that we're living in the stars and that, when we actually do have a physical body, we do have a mind. You can't ignore these facts, and I think that.
What do you call living amongst the fairies? Not being a fairy.
Just being out there in spirit or whatever. And
what does that mean, being out there in spirit? I'll just poke you a bit. What does that mean, being out there in spirit?
Okay, for example, I don't know, but just being maybe.
What?
Like your consciousness is not here, it's out in the universe.
So because you're not being a pigeon, your consciousness has to be out there? Is that what you're saying with that?
I'm just saying that. I know,
you're trying to sort of say that the physical should be able to mix with the spiritual. Should be able to use some of the senses if you feel like it and live in a spiritual.
That's right. What uses a spiritual existence if you can't bring it back here into the human form and share that positive use amongst your fellow humans?
Mm.
I mean, what uses are you able to sit in?
Wait a minute, we were talking about the pigeons, now we're talking about sharing amongst the human beings with us.
I'm just saying, I know. Like pigeons, yeah, good on them, you know. They're not great, that's great. and you know, like humans have that need as well, as to be sexual and whatever else.
This is, I think, the key question. If you are spending your ability, you're sort of encasing this passion, maybe it's sexual, then you can't be using your ability and your focus to be doing something else at the same time. If you are, you're divided, which is very functional.
Mm. But do you think that you can balance all your bodies with one? Your emotional, mental body, and spiritual. And don't just be a spiritual being, don't just be a sexual being. Embrace all of your beings and merge them as one, and be the whole person that you are.
Okay, so now suppose that you're lighting a fire, how do you balance that with pouring water on it?
How do you balance it? Pour a little bit.
Just put the like, what is the little bit though?
When the fire starts to get out of control, you use the water just, like you say, to just keep it all nice and contained, yeah. So it doesn't, the fire doesn't rage out of control.
Oh, it means you mean learning how to control your senses?
Learning how to control the fire, so the fire doesn't. Just go out. We've got the water there to balance it.
So what is what? How do you decide when your senses are controlled?
When you've got the strength to use them, you know, not in the harmful ways.
How do you know what's harmful?
What's your common sense and what your heart feels are.
Okay, let's say.
Moderation, maybe.
Let's say you're in the hospital and you have some disease in which you shouldn't be eating, and I find out about it. Oh, she's there in the hospital. She can't eat anything. She's being fed intravenously. Oh, how horrible. So while the doctors aren't looking, I bring you a big plate of delights from here. And you're so thankful. Oh, I haven't eaten for weeks. I'm just on fed intravenously. Thank you so much. You might appreciate it, right?
Yeah.
What would the doctors say though?
Not
they'd be very angry.
Yeah,
throw me out.
Yeah.
Are you doing to our patient? You're risking her life.
Mm-hmm.
No. Did you see the look on her face when she was eating? She was enjoying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So who's right?
But I think.
No. Who's right? Me or the doctor? Or you? You felt good while you were eating.
Yeah.
I felt good giving the food to you and seeing you enjoy eating.
That's right. But then it's wrong because the outcome of it. Of what's going to happen to her when you're eating that food, because that's going
to
hurt her.
You know? I don't know that. I just felt good in my heart giving it to her. Mm. And she felt good in her heart eating it.
Mm. Well, so that's her right, isn't it?
So we should do that to you when you're in the hospital like that?
Mm. Well, it's like being a cannibal if you think that the cannibal of someone's head is seasonal.
So my point is, who decides? In this case, you're all going to defer to the doctor. The doctor said you shouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
Never mind that she was enjoying at the moment. Never mind that you felt warmth in your heart by giving her the food. the doctor says no, and they know better. So it's all dependent on knowledge. Mm-hmm. How much knowledge do you need about what's going on in the cosmos? Just like you were saying.
Oh, the pigeons, yeah, that's it.
But how do you know what the reactions are if your mind and body are pecking 30 times a day?
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of trying to understand the bigger picture. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, where do you get knowledge of the bigger picture from? How big is big?
The cosmos, the universe, including the universe.
Where do you get, even if you say it, as big as the universe, how do you get that kind of knowledge?
Well, logically, say, praying to God or meditating or whatever, but I've never actually experienced that, so I can't say it.
I was going to say that small can be big as well. There's much complexity in an atom. It's a study of GPS, cosmology, physical science, and this theory.
Yes, the Vedic viewpoint would agree with that. There's a Sanskrit statement, Anur Anyan Mahato Mahiyan. The absolute truth, the supreme absolute truth, is smaller than the smallest and greater than the greatest. Meaning, if you can understand the absolute truth as the smallest thing, you'll also understand it as the biggest thing. If you can understand truly the microcosm, you'll truly understand the macrocosm. Just like this body, for example. This body is like a miniature universe. Because the spiritual energy, the spirit soul is there in the body functions. When the soul leaves, the body is useless for your purposes, although so many other little creatures eat it. Similarly, this universe is like a big body. So, what is the supreme soul that allows the universal body to function? This is Upanishad's knowledge. Anur Anyan Mahato Mahiyan. See that? The supreme absolute truth is smaller than the smallest and greater than the greatest. If you can understand one, you'll understand the other. If you don't understand one side, you'll understand the other side. Mm-hmm.
So, I understand yourself.
Truly. Mm-hmm. Just like this body is matter. Now, what is it that causes matter to be a living conscious entity?
It's your soul.
Yes, all right. So therefore, it means this, what you're saying is the soul is the most important thing. Now how do you live a life dedicated to the soul? Since without the soul, the body's useless. Just like that shirt you're wearing. When it's old, you'll discard it. You wouldn't dedicate your life to pleasing your shirt, right? It's not you. Similarly, the body is not you. So why dedicate your life to pleasing your body? Now even though you're not the shirt, Krishna explains like this in Bhagavad Gita, that the living entity takes on different bodies, just like someone takes on different sets of clothes. So, just because you're not the shirt, though, doesn't mean you neglect the shirt. You take care of it. But you don't base your whole life on it. Just do what's necessary, you know? Just do the minimum to keep your shirt in good condition. You know, it's not you.
Not your essence.
It's not you. It's a covering.
So how do you get that point in truth, then? Well, who you are, then?
Right. You need spiritual techniques to realize your spiritual nature. And realizing your spiritual nature is far more important than absorbing yourself in bodily maintenance. That doesn't mean you should ignore the body. It's like if you have a car. You have a car?
No.
You have a car. Now, when you get into the car, do you think you are the car? You know, if someone bangs into you, you'll say, "Ah, you hit me!" Right? But you know you're different from the car. It's a vehicle that you ride around in. Similarly, the body is a vehicle that the spirit soul rides around. This is beginning knowledge given by Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. So, just because you're not the car, does that mean you neglect the car? No, you put petrol in it, you put oil in it. But when you put oil in your car, do you think, "Oh, I'm drinking the oil"? No, it's for the vehicle. Similarly, you take care of the body, whatever is necessary, but you don't think that solving the body's problems are solving your main problems in life. Nor do you think that stimulating the body is giving you pleasure. So, oh, some beautiful girl saw your jersey hanging on a hook and she walked up to it and just started stroking it. How would you feel? How would you feel?
Oh, it's like if she loves fashion or something like that.
She just started stroking her jersey. Oh, Australian. Oh, so nice. Oh. How would you feel?
Oh, I think she's probably, I don't know, I think she'd be crazy or whatever.
Yeah.
No, you'd be thinking, "Hey, yeah, I'm over here." You know? That's what you'd be thinking, you know? That's just my shirt. Alright?
Yeah.
You get the point. Gratification of your body will not satisfy you. The body is just an external covering. It's the first step in spiritual knowledge.
Then can I ask why God would give the body pleasure? For experiencing that.
Okay. You ever see little kids play?
Yeah.
toys and rattles and things like that. Did you do that now?
Well, for people.
No, no, for yourself.
No, I don't.
Pick up a rattle. Stick it in your mouth. Did you do it?
No.
Why?
Because this I've outgrown that. It saves me a lot.
But don't you, when you see this pleasure,
yeah.
You should get yourself a toy truck and would you do that?
I'll probably still find the Xbox cars.
No, no, no. Would you get a toy truck and a toy airplane? Like little kids, would you do that?
Probably not.
Why? Why not?
Because it just wouldn't give me the pleasure I would have wanted to get out of it when I was a kid.
So what you're saying is that there are higher and lower pleasures.
Depending on growth and the state of world.
Right. So therefore, the whole point of having a spiritually successful life is to move up from the low-grade animal pleasures to the high-grade spiritual pleasures.
Okay.
So one who has the high-grade spiritual pleasures has no time or interest in the low-grade physical pleasures.
Okay, yeah.
So it's not a question of having it all. It's like, you know, what do you want with the inferior when you got the superior?
That's like the girl I was speaking to roughly says, what's the best car you want? And I said, oh, full drive. And she goes, well, what was the old one? I said, oh, a Datsun. She goes, well, it's like, if you've got a Datsun and you've got a full drive, why would you want to go back to the Datsun? You sort of like, you want the full drive now. You know, it's like...
You told you that?
Sense of a metaphor. Not the girls I was chatting to you.
Nothing.
As a metaphor, so to speak, you know.
Oh, really? She gave you a car metaphor, huh?
Yeah, we
just had an example.
So, is in the spiritual pleasures and physical pleasures.
Yeah, suppose all you had was a, 1960 Morris Minor. That was your only car. You'd be pretty attached, right? Because it got you where you wanted to go. But suppose I came along and just criticized, oh, that wreck you're driving. It's useless. How could you drive in such a thing? You might get a bit offended, right?
Mm.
Hey, well, look, this is all I have, it does get me, to the, the corner store and back, if it's all you've had, then you'll be very defensive. But if I say, look, I got a deal for you. Throw out your junkie Morris Minor, and I'll give you a brand new Mercedes.
Mm.
What would you say then?
You snap it up.
Right, why?
Because you want something better for yourself.
Right, but no, according to one theory, No, you say, no, let's have a balance. Why should we give up one for the other? Let me have the Mercedes and... But no, you immediately said, oh, get rid of that Morris Minor. I'll take the Mercedes any day. Recognizing
he
had his better.
He had to choose, yeah.
But you can only drive one at a time.
Your wife couldn't drive Mercedes on the weekends.
No, you can only drive one at a time.
Okay.
Similarly with your senses, you can only do one thing at a time. That's why, in very simple terms, like Jesus says in the New Testament, no man can serve two masters. It's just a very simple way of saying, you're focused on one thing or the other.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Choose that path.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So now, it seems that if we're really going to justify our existence as human beings, we need to really understand the supreme pleasure. Animals can't do that. Animals, they're driven on the level where they're at. You don't see chickens going through an identity crisis. Like, no, why are we pecking the ground? But human beings can do that. Like, why am I doing this? What is it all about? So what separates humans from animals, what should separate humans from animals, is the human desire for understanding life's situation and the quest for the highest pleasure. Animals don't worry about the highest pleasure. They're very much bound by their limited sensory set of activities. So much so they seem so satisfied, and human beings are attracted to that. Look at the simplicity of animal pleasure. But animals can't get beyond that. The human being can use his or her sophisticated consciousness for understanding what's the highest pleasure in life and shaping your lifestyle to get that. Animals can't do that. Animals can't transcend. But if a human being doesn't use that superior consciousness for spiritual attainment, then it's a great tragedy. In fact, you can see human beings becoming worse than animals. Animals don't botch up the whole planet for their eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, but humans do. Did you know? One of the famous biologists of the world, he said that human beings are the only species that the ecosphere can do without. If they disappear, it'll make no loss to the ecosystem. But every other species causes some kind of problem if you wipe them out. Not human beings.
It's all part of the food chain.
Yeah. The food chain sort of goes upwards through the animals to the person at the top. Gets it all.
You take out the human beings from the spaces of Earth, you will not destroy the ecosystem, but every other creature can cause damage.
Yeah, yeah.
Which shows you, not that human beings are useless, but human beings have another purpose. Just like, let's just take the statistic I gave you. Everybody's talking about the world food problem, the suffering people in the third world, developing countries don't have enough food to eat, famines here and there. And the fact is, half the size of the North Island can grow enough protein to feed 6 billion people. If you grow the right thing. So obviously the food problem is not such a huge thing. But people don't know what to do, nor do they care. People think, oh, who wants to eat spirulina every day? I'd rather work hard, pollute the planet, eat frozen food, eat canned food, and be unhealthy the rest of my life, all for the sake of my son. If you've ever gone to a Freezing Works, you get a different perspective. Anyone ever done that? You ever gone to a Freezing Works?
In the yards.
No, inside.
No, not inside. I've never been anywhere.
Couldn't handle it, but you used to eat it, right?
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Have you ever been to the Freezing Works?
I've never been to the Freezing Works, no.
Mm. I know what they do, you know what they do, yeah. Mm.
But how many people think about that when they bite into their Big Mac?
Yeah. And they're eating the fear of the animal, so because it's that adrenaline that goes through before they're going to be killed. I said, I reckon a lot of the diseases come from, isn't it? Because the cow sees the other one killed in front of it.
He made a video of Freezing Works here. Some of the ladies here, they're finishing a polytech course in art, and so a course called for video film work. So they, what's this big Freezing Works up north of Wellington, Peyton something? Taylor Preston. Yeah. They went, because they were sweet young ladies, they kind of sweet talked the guys there that we're doing a school paper on the New Zealand economy, and we know meat is completely necessary for a New Zealand economy, and we just want to document it. And so the guys fell for it. They actually let them in, out with a camera, which they actually don't do anymore because they're so afraid of the animal rights movement.
Yeah,
So they got some good footage. Yeah. And finally, at the end, when they were at the part of the Freezing Works where they're dealing with the cows, it was so horrible, and the workers sort of starting to get affected. It's like, I'm going to get you out of here. So, when human beings don't understand the goal of life is enlightenment, they lose even their ability to live a material life properly. They become deranged because of misuse of their intelligence. They become worse than animals. Animals don't disrupt nature. A human being devoid of spiritual goals disrupts nature. Human beings cannot control their senses based on material reasons. So many countries have tried that. Let's just have secular law and order. It doesn't work because it takes the spiritual taste for a human being to control his or her senses. So therefore, we've been discussing desire, how it is that we have desire, what types of desires are. Even if you say animal desire, does that desire come from matter or does it come from something else? Does this land have desire? Does wall have desire? Why do living creatures have desires, even very primitive, such as a tree moving toward the sun?
It's living.
What does it mean to be living?
Feelings.
Well, what has the feelings?
Have that consciousness.
Okay.
Now, let's say you do nothing, then you're idle, and then you're a consciousness with no air. So, it's just frustrating.
If you do nothing, you're idle.
If you're idle, like you're not making any action in the world, then... already mental action as well. For conscious, think of yourself like completely cut off, in a darkened room with no light, no contact with other people. You go mad.
You're still acting though.
Hmm.
Krishna explains this point in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that one who sees action in inaction and inaction in action is actually a wise person. In other words, you can be physically inactive, but still there's action going on. The mind is moving, the desires are active. And someone can be very physically active, but actually be inactive because their actions are not producing any karmic result. It's like Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita was actually inactive, although active, because he was not performing karmic activity even while fighting on a battlefield. That's the mystery of Bhagavad Gita. Where someone could be still in a dark room, as you say, and they're still classified as being active because their mind is moving, their desires are moving. Mm-hmm. So you said consciousness. Mm. Now, of course, you know that contemporary science has no explanation for that.
Right. But I wanted the model that was bringing up to it. The basic function of the senses. One of the things that is interesting is that the amount of information that's available to consciousness at any time is far less than the amount that is actually brought in by the senses as a whole. For example, you sort of sit and as an exercise, and just think about the noises that are going on around you. Mm-hmm. You have to traffic over the air, hear a bird chirping, and hear the people conversing through the paper flights, for example. All of this is going on, but unless you actually focus on it, you're not aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still being taken in.
Mm-hmm.
What that says is that consciousness is a very limited resource. Mm-hmm. It must be clearly focused and directed as much as you thought.
Mm-hmm. Not only are your senses limited, mm-hmm. but your conscious awareness is limited. So that's another disadvantage for absorbing yourself in lower concerns or bodily concerns. Your consciousness becomes dull. It doesn't reveal its true glories. Consciousness reveals its true glories in spiritual expression. Now, in Bhagavad Gita, the point is made by Krishna that consciousness is the evidence of the soul. Consciousness is symptomatic of the presence of the spirit soul. So, according to Bhagavad Gita, there'll never be a material explanation for consciousness because consciousness is not indicating anything material. A few scientists are saying that these days that we'll never solve the riddle of consciousness. Let's just face it, it's just something else. And of course, you got a bigger camp that says, we will solve it, everything is matter without a doubt. Just give us time and more grant money, we'll.
Talking about what's been interesting, actually, talking about a dualistic reality, but the division being soul and material rather than mind and body.
Because
saying that mind is part of the material world.
Yes, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the mind is subtle matter.
Mm.
The body is gross matter. So there's no question of mind over matter. Mind is matter. The spoon benders are just materialists. Nothing spiritual that someone can bend a spoon with their mind. You've all seen videos of Uri Geller bending it. No, don't use the good silver. So people think, oh, that's spiritual. The so-called psychic is just subtle materialism. It's the powers of the mind, which are occult.
So, do you believe that everybody has the powers of things, but is it just that like, some certain people that can bring it to the fore?
Yes.
You do?
Yes. Yes, just like an athlete may have more power than you.
Mm.
Similarly, a spoon bender has more power.
In that. Yeah.
In that area. Whether it's by training or natural talent, it's just more ability.
So mind is the same.
You're not playing for the All Blacks for a reason, right?
Yeah.
Similarly, you're not bending spoons for another reason. It's just some people have bigger muscles, whether the muscle is in the arm, the leg, or in the mind. It's just a bigger muscle.
Sure. Do you think that the mind and body matter is the same energy that is a spiritual essence as well? Is it the same energy? Is this vibrating at a different speed? Or
that's a good point. Now, you were mentioning about dualism. Actually, what Bhagavad Gita recommends, what Krishna's talking about, is not so much dualism like spirit versus matter. More like emanationism, that matter and spirit emanate from the same source. So it's not like they're just two separate things, dual, which don't have any relation. They're both energies that emanate from the same source. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that all the matter, all the spirit emanates from him. So in that sense, they are interrelated in that they spring from the same source. Now, Krishna can turn spirit into matter and matter into spirit because they're his energy. So it's not that they're completely separate. So therefore, often, for example, scientists will say, well, this dualism is just too much. How do you have the so-called spiritual energy and the so-called material energy? I don't have anything to hell to do with each other. I mean, we just can't handle that. We can't accept that, you know? You get one thing over here, another thing way over there. There's just no relation between the two.
The classic proposition of our ethics, dualism, is the division between body and mind, where there's matter and mind. With mind, you can affect matter, but not vice versa. So, by his reasoning, the awareness and all mental function is purely illusion.
Mm-hmm.
I've never agreed with that.
Yes.
Two.
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna clearly explains how mind can affect matter and matter can affect mind, but both are material. Then there's another energy, the spiritual energy. It's related to the material energy in that it comes from the same source as the material energy.
So what's the difference then?
One produces manifestations that are temporary. The other has nothing temporary about it. One is responsible for things that have a beginning and an end, controlled by time. Matter is always under the influence of time. Spiritual energy has nothing to do with time.
Right. That's interesting. Time.
So if you want the best pleasure in life, you've got to get beyond the confines of past, present, and future. Your pleasure has to be free from the limitations of past, present, and future. Then you can be a true enjoyer.
But what sort of identity you have then?
You have to revive your spiritual identity beyond the shirt. What is your identity beyond the Australian shirt?
Who I am. That's
true. Yeah. Yeah, well then, but it's good you recognize you are spirit, but what, how does a spirit soul act?
Through love.
Well, how do you do that? Listen, you know, you meet somebody, hey, you know, I have a spirit soul, that's love. What do you do? What do you do?
You show high qualities of kindness and giving and...
So what, how do you do that?
Through your actions.
You iron their shirt?
No, you uplift their spirits through being compassionate or...
How do you uplift the spirit?
By seeing the best in the person.
Can you see the spirit soul?
No, but you can believe it's there.
Yeah, okay. You believe it's there. And then?
And then you act on that belief.
So, okay. So there it is. You know, I believe your spirit soul is there. And then you grab it, right?
Now you try and sense it in a different way.
How do you do that? You tickle her back or what?
No, not in a physical way.
Okay, fair enough. What do you do? Let's say you've gone to a cafe and there's a nice spiritual girl there. So. How do you carry on? Excuse me, I'm a spiritual guy, you know. And, what do you do?
I'm not sure. That's all spiritual technique. You know?
Okay, fair enough. Yes, the greatest need is for spiritual knowledge. Otherwise, people don't have a clue what to do. Their life becomes wasted, and then another death comes.
And what? After that? After reincarnation? Or they evaluate their life with what they've just achieved in that lifetime and put it onto the growth of their past lives.
Well, where do you think, for example, you're headed in your next life? You believe you feel you're going to have a next life?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm still trying to work all this life out.
Okay. So, not sure where you'd be heading in your next life?
No.
Does it worry you, or is it too far away?
Oh, I'm not scared of death.
Why not?
Because I believe in eternal life. So, I mean, I'm not scared that I'll pass over from this physical into the spiritual. But at the same time, I don't know exactly where I'm going.
Why do you believe in eternal life?
I just feel that. I just can't see the point of just being buried in the ground when you die, or being burnt, and then that's it. That's your life. I think there's more than that.
That's a good gut reaction. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, the boy has a future, the young adult has a future, the old adult has a future. So why doesn't the person who's dying have a future? Throughout all the phases of the body, throughout all the changes of the body, the spirit soul is still there. Your basic core identity is intact. You can remember when you were a little kid with a little kid's body. So throughout all the changes of the body, something remains the same. All the cells in your body are always changing, even the brain. So. But something remains the same. So yeah, you have it's right to have that kind of feeling. But then what is the future going to be? That we have to try to understand. And that takes superior knowledge.
Mm.
You have to take your knowledge from a source that has an overview on the whole situation.
Mm.
Otherwise you'll make the mistake that I was talking about. If I went to the hospital, she wasn't supposed to eat and I fed her. She'd feel good for the moment. I'd feel good for the moment, but the doctor's, ready to throw us out. Because the doctors know that, well, she's feeling good now, but in a couple of hours, she's going to be in complete pain. Because we don't understand the whole scenario of action and reaction, we're forced to behave ignorantly. You don't know the results of your activities, right? You can only think, well, I felt good when I did it, and it seemed like a wholesome thing.
Yeah.
It seemed like I was helping people.
Yeah, but the methods of empirical science over the last few centuries have proved hugely successful in understanding a lot of Summer and Phil will. And use practical advantage as well. I mean, for example, we take it for granted that we can get an airplane and fly for the other side of the world, and it's safe. Science needs to completely understand the physics behind that to make that possible. And, you know, so I think that is, you know, a useful service to humanity that we can, you know, just an average guy on the street, you're on a plane, you go to another country.
Okay, then you get to another country, then what?
Well, you're here.
All right, so if you have no understanding of life and you get on a plane and go to another country, you just brought your problems somewhere else. If you stay in one place all your life and you can understand what is the meaning of life, then you've solved your problem. So the whole point is not to go from here to there. The point is to solve your problems in life. Understand what is what. Now, science has proved fabulously successful in a limited range of phenomena. Very limited range.
But it is empirical. It isn't taken directly from a source.
It's based on imperfect sciences.
Give them a trial here. Trial and error and reiteration.
Now, the point of Bhagavad Gita is that those kind of methods, the empirical method, will not be successful when dealing with the spiritual reality. Actually, it cannot be successful in the materiality because your senses are limited. How do you get knowledge of the whole picture, spiritual and material? That is the advantage of taking knowledge from Krishna. That's the advantage of taking knowledge from the ultimate source of it. So our desire reaches its perfection in connection with the source of everything. I desire to have the best possible knowledge and the best possible pleasure. And you realize you can't do that empirically because you're tiny, too small.
I don't know empirically.
through external means.
Laboratory method.
Yeah.
It's like, this is your first time in New Zealand?
Yeah.
So you didn't know what it was like, so you kind of got a bit of information from here and there, and you know, then you got on the plane, right? And you started to explore.
So if you want to find the spiritual knowledge or understanding, and you can't gain that through external means, then how do you go about it? I mean, this is the question.
Exactly, very good. That's a $1 million question. You have to take your knowledge from the source of everything. That is the advantage of Krishna consciousness. If indeed the ultimate source of everything is conscious, take your knowledge from there.
How do you do that? You just press a button or something?
Good question. So that brings you to the techniques of real yoga. Real yoga means how to connect with the source of everything. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, you connect to me and then I make available to you everything you need to know. But on your own, you can't do it because you're too tiny. And you're subject to being covered by illusion. You've got to have the desire.
Yeah. You want to do to find that.
Yes. And if you're too busy caught up in desiring the lower things, you'll never have a higher desire. Mm-hmm. Can't have it all.
So what, yoga, is that the only way? Yoga.
No, yoga means not simply stretching the body. Yoga means to connect. The actual definition of yoga means to connect. So you have to find out how to make the highest connection so you get the highest knowledge and the highest pleasure. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying the highest connection you can make is to connect to Krishna, because Krishna is the source of all pleasure and knowledge. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita is a desire book for having the highest desire. Then you're satisfied. You can't get rid of desire. You desire to come to New Zealand, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Similarly, there are other regions you can desire to go to. How would you get information about the spiritual realm and develop a desire to go there? It's like you cross the ditch, you came to New Zealand. Is it possible to cross from the material realm into the spiritual realm? Okay, how do you do that? These are the things we should desire.
And it's not just one way of doing it here, is it? There's probably different ways of actually making the connection to that source.
The best way is to take your information from the source. That's the quickest way, rather than just arbitrarily say, well, there's probably other ways.
Meditation?
Well, everyone's meditating. It's a question of what are you meditating on?
Well, if you meditate on connecting to the source.
You have to know what the source is, otherwise how can your meditation be strong if you don't know what the source is? The best way to find out about the source is to take knowledge from the source. That's the advantage Krishna is giving in Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, how can you meditate strongly if you don't know anything about the source? It's just a theory, it's just a vague concept. But if the source says, I'm like this, I'm like that, think in this way, you'll have me, then you got it.
So you have to ask questions to source.
Inquisitiveness is always a good thing, but more importantly, you have to be willing to hear and apply in your life so that you can see the results. Not blind faith, but just have to be willing to walk into the laboratory, apply your senses and get the results. That's all Krishna asks in Bhagavad Gita. But people have no time. They're too busy with their lower pursuits.
And that's the truth. The bodies of what he or she resources
in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, this is how you verify. How did you know New Zealand's the truth?
By knowing this on maps and...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but ultimately, what was the proof? Right, okay. So, when you follow Krishna's instructions, when you follow the map, the ultimate proof will be you get to where the map says.
Yeah.
Proof of the pudding is in the taste. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, that's fair enough.
In Australia, people were telling you, yeah, New Zealand, yeah, check it out, you know. It's like this, it's like that, you know. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Kiwis, they're really different. So, yeah, go check it out. They told you some places to go to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're from Brisbane, you know, Gold Coast, Sunshine Coast, but it wasn't enough, right? You wanted something different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas over here, everyone's thinking Gold Coast, Sunshine Coast. So you had some preliminary information, and then you acted on that information, and here you are.
The same goes with...
What Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the same thing goes.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I just explained to you the metaphysical foundation of Krishna consciousness.
But if I was, okay, because like, I sort of want to be on a spiritual path, and I've decided, like, if I was to meditate every day and make a conscious effort to get on this path, like, do I just silence the mind and relax the body and just wait to hear the voices talking to me? Like, you know, like,
yeah.
I just don't, I can't grab.
Oh, you get a lot of voices talking to you.
Hi. Take me to Australia.
Talking about those already, yeah.
It's a bit confusing sometimes.
Yeah, I get it. If you come here, and the ladies won't tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll act for your highest welfare. No, meditation doesn't mean to blank the mind on anything. I don't know why people think that. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains the highest yogi is the one who's always meditating on him. So you have to learn how to meditate on Krishna. Meditating on some candle or some vague whatever is not going to give you the pleasure. Now your breathing may slow down and you may become temporarily more peaceful, but we're talking about sinking your senses into some real pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
You need something specific for that.
The yogis, do the Indian culture use tantric sex as a way of enlightenment as well?
No, that's only for the lower classes. Do you know what the rules are for tantric?
No, I don't know much.
Right. What they do, they come to the West and tell you, spiritual sex. They don't give you the whole system, which involves things like going to cemeteries and burning bodies and extracting a certain part of the burnt body and all sorts of gruesome things like that.
Oh.
It's meant for people who are, you know, not too bright. In other words, look, you're a pretty gory person, you know, and these are the activities you're attracted to. Well, you know, in some way, try to do those activities and develop some kind of inclination towards hearing about spiritual things. Maybe in 10 births from now you might get it together.
Yeah.
It's meant for low-class persons.
Do you think that getting in touch with the source then is connecting all the chakras in balance and harmony with each other?
That can be most effectively done by spiritual methods. It's not the most important thing getting the chakras in balance. The chakras are just subtle energy centers in the subtle material mind. It's not spiritual. It's like I go to an alternative doctor and he had all these fancy machines. He told me my chakras are perfectly balanced, but I've never done anything in my life to balance my chakras consciously, you know. It's a subtle material thing.
So you just focus purely on the source.
What is the nature of the source? You are a tiny entity, you have desire. So what about the ultimate source of everything? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, he is conscious and has desires. Oh, and how can you have desires? You're just a part of Krishna, part of the complete whole. You have desires.
Mm.
So, focus on the desires of the supreme source of everything. That is Krishna consciousness. Focus on Krishna's desires. Yes, important point.
What do you refer to Krishna as a he then? Is that...
It has nothing to do with male, female gender as we know it.
Oh, okay.
We take male, female gender to be so important and actually a very insignificant thing. In the spiritual sense, he refers to the source of energy and she refers to energy. That means, actually, in speaking materially, both the men and the women are she, because they're all both energy. Actually, Krishna is the only male. Krishna is the only source. He's the source of the energy. Everything else is female. So it's not referring to the gender as we know.
So you could ask the source of questions like, what, focusing on the desire of the source, or the Krishna, how, in what relation to that is my relation to my spiritual growth?
For you, you start to read Bhagavad Gita and you start to chant the Hare Krishna mantra all over. How long will you be in New Zealand for?
I'll be back on the 16th of January.
Okay, so you can make a solid beginning in your spiritual development by doing that. Otherwise, that's about 25 now. Yeah. You've seen the beaches, you've seen the girls, you've seen the drugs, you've seen this and that, right? Mm. The same old thing over and over again. Mm. Been there, done that. So now you should raise your aspirations, raise your desires. Mm. So while you're here, how long will you be in London?
Probably tomorrow.
Okay. And to?
To the volcanoes and up north. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can make a big beginning here. Increase it. Change your desires. Yeah. To be in harmony with the Supreme Desire, the Krishna's Desire. By the time you got back to Brisbane, you could really get into something. I'm going to Brisbane in a few days, but you won't be there. Alright, any other questions?
I've got a question.
Yes.
Can we get to the pigeons a bit? And when you realize that we're chanting and we're focusing on your spiritual path, I find it quite hard, like you're saying, that it's okay to, what we're talking about, balancing the senses, balancing the spiritual life.
Your spiritual life, it has to include senses. You can't do anything without the senses.
No,
it's a question of what you do with your senses.
Yeah, okay. So, say we have our senses, say it be physical senses, like we're talking about with pigeons. So, say, or eating, say, say we're still wanting to go down our spiritual path,
mm-hmm.
but we obviously have physical senses as well. And I think what we were trying to say before, what I was trying to say, was that is it moderation? So in other words, if you can still have pleasures of the body, you're not going outside the bonds of Krishna consciousness. So, you know, it's like, oh, are you punished, say, or not punished in the sense, but, you know, how do you know that you've actually had sex too much or whatever, or you've done something wrong against Krishna, do you know what I mean? And you have to go back on
and say. So what you're saying is, who sets the standard?
Yeah, totally, yeah.
How can you set the standard? You're a tiny thing.
Yeah.
The standard has to be set by cause of all causes, the source of everything. Yeah. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am sex life according to Dharma. What is Dharma in terms of sex? Sex used to bring into the world empowered, enlightened entities. Krishna says, I am that. Everything else, Krishna says, forget it. It's meant for the lowly evolved entities.
Mm-hmm. So it's only to do with bringing and empowered people into the world.
Well, that is the natural function of the thing.
But in comparison to animals, say, they correctly know.
Yeah.
I mean, do they have no purpose?
No, the animals are simply, you know, expanding species.
Yeah.
Yeah. Human beings should have a higher purpose.
Mm.
Human beings have the power to control the quality of their offspring through their consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, I am sex life according to Dharma. According to the consciousness of the man and woman at the time of conception, a certain quality entity is attractive to take birth. Human beings can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Animals don't worry about that.
Mm-hmm. So it's all she's experience.
It's a combination of influences.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
The parents, by their consciousness, attract a certain quality of living entity according to the consciousness at the time of conception. So that's why in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita does not deny sex. But Krishna says, these are the right techniques, otherwise it's just animal life.
Mm.
So how does that sound?
Now
if you don't know anything better, everyone just makes such a big thing out of this sex thing because it's all they know about, you know? Like someone who's driving the Morris Minor that's 30 years old, that's, you know, they're so attached to it. You know, they get so defensive when you talk about it. Suddenly, if all people know is sex pleasure, they just get so defensive about it. I mean, really, we gotta balance. I mean, really, you know, don't knock it out completely. I mean, really. Because it's all you know. But if you know something better, then you easily give up these lower things.
Yeah.
But you can't do it without knowing what's better pleasure. That's what's boggling your mind. And you know, okay, yeah, you know, I've had my tough times, you know, I've had some good times too. I mean, really, it was, you know, it must have kind of just, you know, turn your back on it all. But if you see you're getting better, you'll easily leave aside the lower thing. Mm. And by the way, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna flatly declares, you will not be able to give up the lower unless you get a taste of higher pleasure. Don't even try, it won't work.
Okay, so in other words, work would be classed as a lower pleasure then as well?
Depends on what you're working for. Arjuna's fighting in Bhagavad Gita.
Mm. What if you're just working to pay off debts?
Pretty dry, isn't it? Pretty selfish.
Selfish?
Yeah, selfish. You're just working to, you know, for limited purposes, you know, me and my debts. That's not enlivening. You don't find enlivening, do you?
Well, I do. I don't absolutely detest it.
But it's not enlivening. Well, I'm going to work today to pay off debts. I'm so inspired.
Yeah. But so what would you suggest? Not do it.
No, I didn't say that.
Well, what would you suggest?
I would suggest work for the highest purpose.
So make it enlightening.
Yes.
So how do you make something like that enlivening towards Krishna consciousness?
Mm. It all depends on who is the enjoyer of your activity. Arjuna was fighting. His whole argument in Bhagavad Gita was he doesn't want to fight because he doesn't see any good can come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But what did Krishna tell him? Do it for me. Krishna said, I see the whole picture. Even something like fighting, although it looks, from a limited point of view, to cause havoc, I see the whole picture and ultimately causes good, in this case.
Mm-hmm. So you have to look for the goodness?
No, you have to do your activities as a sacrifice for Krishna's pleasure.
And in return you'll get spiritual
enlightenment. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? You've read Bhagavad Gita, right?
Yes.
All that you do as an offering for me. All that you give away, do as an offering for me.
But I can't see how I could do that if it's the paying off debts, because that's not for Krishna.
Right, so don't work completely to pay off debts. No. What about your spiritual debts? You've got to pay those off. If you're so debt conscious, be conscious of your spiritual debts.
Yeah, but you still have to do the material debts as well.
Yeah, that's right. But don't let that absorb all of your energies.
I see. So split it up, balance it.
Of course!
Okay, so that's why I'm saying, okay, if you can balance that side, why can't you balance the other one?
What's the other one?
Physical need.
Like what?
Physical need. Sex.
And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I'm sex-light according to Dharma. So get a man, marry him, produce a child that's going to save the world.
That's
a question. Yeah.
Why? It's like impossible.
Why? Impossible? Why? What do you mean?
Impossible. No, but I mean, very difficult to break down into
Break down into what?
Into a process.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, you lost me. What do you mean? Very difficult.
Okay, if you were to say, like, I'm going to find this great man and produce this great child.
Yeah.
Where do you start?
Easy. You have to go to places where great people are. You don't look in the street for a great person, you know? You don't look at it in a club, you know? Who here is enlightened at the club tonight? Birds of a feather flock together. So, Bhagavad Gita doesn't deny sex. It just points out what is the real purpose of it for human beings. You understand?
Mm-hmm. I've heard that dolphins and humans are the only two species on the planet that actually have sex for pleasure rather than just procreation.
If it's pleasure, how come human beings aren't so? Why aren't they so happy? They're having more of it than ever before. Why aren't they just, you know, in ecstasy? Wow, you know, why are they so miserable?
Yeah.
You know what you should do? I've done this. Watch the streets of Wellington on a Friday night.
Yeah.
First of all, watch as people are leaving work around 5:00. See the lines form at the package store, at the liquor store, and see the look on people's faces. Go down to Courtney Place, you know, 10:00, between 10 and 2 in the morning, watch the people, you know, watch the people, Wellingtonians just let it all out, you know, and just, you can start to feel the mood build, you know, 4:00 Friday afternoon, it's Friday, let's go. Then what you do, and I've done this, position yourself on the streets between 8:00 and 9 a.m. Monday morning. Watch those same things. I've done it.
Oh, they're miserable.
Hungover.
Hungover, angry, frustrated.
Mm.
The men look totally spaced out, and the women look angry.
Mm. What do you think would happen if you took alcohol away?
People couldn't live. They can't face reality.
But what? Imagine if you did that, say with a certain type of a, you know, you did it as a experiment, say, to 200 people or something, and they still have to work, they still have to carry on their same life.
They can't. They don't have face reality. They can't relate to each other without alcohol.
In 6 months, something might change.
They can't relate to each other without alcohol.
But no one's ever tried it, have they?
They don't want to. They have no desire to do that.
But if you force people to do it,
right?
Of course. You made an experiment, so you paid them money to do it, like survival.
Should we force you? Should we force you?
I'm already
be
doing
spiritual. We're forcing you to be spiritual.
I'm not drinking. I'm not doing any. I'm not having any addictions. So you know, so people would, you could try it, like a survivor.
Okay. Why don't we side with you first?
Oh, I just thought it'd be interesting.
Yeah, it's it. We will try with you first. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, it might be interesting, but I mean, for Survivor, it's sort of entertaining, but...
Yeah. But I was just wondering if the difference... Like, if you're saying at 9 o'clock in the morning,
yeah,
and a grumpy, well, imagine you're
what
saying...
What, grumpy? You're still like this.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering if someone's an experiment.
It's not just because of drinking.
At 9 o'clock
it's not just because of drinking.
Well, a lot of it is.
No, well, you're missing the point.
A lot of it is about addictions.
It's about frustrated material desires.
Yeah.
They did the whole works on the weekend, and just it just wasn't all that it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
They just let it all hang out, you know, on all fronts.
Yeah, but I remember you were saying once before that come Friday night, all the pressure was like, just let loose, pop
right,
your cork.
Right.
You always say, well, popping your cork is having you know, alcohol and what have you. So,
not only alcohol, just, you know, clubs and theater and just, you know.
Yeah.
End of the work night.
Yeah.
And then, you know, having your rendezvous with your temporary significant other, and, you know.
Yeah.
And then Monday morning, look at those same faces. It looks like they're going to a morgue. Mm. The women are angry. They look angry. Mm. You know, we gave it all and we just didn't get what we wanted.
Mm.
And men are totally depleted and spaced out, you know. Tapped out. The women look grumpy and the men look just real bleary-eyed. Like. The women look angry. Right?
You look good enough.
Yeah.
Just
been used. Didn't get what I wanted out of them. But there's no other way they can act. Women are angry, but what else can they do? The women are differently composed than the men. The women are thinking, we'll give the physical liberties, hoping to get some emotional fulfillment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the men aren't thinking that way. And by Monday morning, the women may realize it. But then next week, they repeat the same mistake, because there's going to be someone out there who's going to give me the emotional fulfillment.
Right. Yeah. From our perspective, my attachment to relationships has always been towards the emotional desire. And you'd think, from a woman's point of view, that you know, this would be very attractive and I'd be queuing up, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. you talk about a choice, but I mean, I think there's a difference between choice and desire and the evolution of choice.
You just have to put the word out, you know?
Yeah.
Emotional man.
It's a short thing. Okay, yeah, I'm having a hard time between boyfriends, for example. Then it's a short thing. At that point, you're interested, but not as a long term thing, not as a. Not as a.
What are you interested in?
Material desire. Money.
Oh, well, yes.
That's right.
That's also true, yeah. The very short thing is the physical, but then more than that would be the emotional, and then, of course, the security, which includes money, a nice home, steady home, this, that, the other friends, whatever. So, yes, all those things they're expecting, but then when Monday morning comes, they realize they got none of it.
Mm.
And most men are trying to avoid all that.
But some aren't, as we just did.
Right. So,
yeah.
In any case, by the time Monday morning comes around, most are dissatisfied. Just watch their faces. I've done it. I used to sit on Oriental Parade. That's where I guess the wealthy people are walking from their homes and flats into the city, you know, in suits and their ladies in their business suits. Back to work Monday morning. But look at those same people Friday evening. Ah, oh, relief. Ah.
But that might have been the way over the course of the history we know of.
This is life as it's lived for most people these days.
These days.
You.
Yeah, these days. So it wasn't like that, you know. So
yes, it was like that, but not as extreme as it is now. And it's not like that for...
But it's not like that when you live in a kibbutz, is it?
Kibbutz?
Yeah.
Commune?
Yeah, community. Yeah,
so whether you live in this kind of community or that kind of community, if you do not have the goal of connecting your desires with the desires of the supreme desire, then what is the point? That's going to be dissatisfaction. You can't satisfy yourself. You're too tiny.
So are you a part of that consciousness as well?
Yes. But you're a part. You're not the whole. So you have to harmonize. That is Krishna consciousness, to harmonize your consciousness with the supreme consciousness. That is Krishna consciousness. So with your work, if you would harmonize your work with Krishna consciousness, then you would be satisfied.
Really, it just means detach yourself, doesn't it?
No, detach voidism. That's negative. Just detach yourself. Just say no. What are you going to say yes to?
Don't get involved in the negativities of work.
But that's easy to do if you're working for a higher purpose than just paying your debts.
Yeah. So you do it still.
Yeah, you have to find a higher purpose to work for. I'm not saying don't maintain yourself or pay your debts. I'm saying there has to be a higher purpose than that.
So you have to find the happiness.
What did I just say?
Yeah.
You have to find a higher purpose to work for. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whatever you do, do as an offering for me. So you have to find some way to take the proceeds and offer to Krishna, not simply pay debts. You'll be miserable that way. It's not enlivening for the soul just to work for bodily maintenance. Is it really that?
No, it's not that hard, but I just sort of thought, well, why not completely give up and then come and live in the ashram?
Because that may not be the best thing for you. I probably wouldn't advise you to do that.
Pardon?
I probably wouldn't advise you to do that.
But how do you actually know this?
Yeah, we have a doctor who knows what's best for the patient.
I see, so you've got a swellman who's a savior.
So he'll tell you, this is good for your situation, this medicine.
Yeah,
it's the difference between, you know, a 19-year-old girl and a how old? 45-year-old lady. You can live a difference, you know.
Yeah.
But you can always live nearby. We can teach you how to practice Krishna consciousness in your home.
So, what's the difficulty?
But because of your age and your the way your lifestyle is now, you can't imitate, let's say, what a 19 or 20-year-old girl is doing.
Oh, well, no, I'm not trying to.
Right.
But you're also not saying that the ashram only accepts people who are 19 or 20.
No, I'm not saying that, but generally it's harder for older persons to adapt to communal living. It's not necessary to live communally to be Krishna conscious. It's not absolutely necessary.
No, it's not necessary.
The whole point is wherever you live to make that a place of spiritual cultivation.
Right.
For young people who are especially prone to, you know, peer pressure, it's often better they live together.
Oh, I see. To make them stronger, to make the bond stronger.
Right.
Right.
Because
right.
Young people will hang out anyway, so it's best to give them a constructive scene to hang out in.
Right.
Whereas someone of your age, basically, you know, been there, done that, you know?
Lived in communes.
You've been through the mill, and
yeah.
So you should be...
So you expect us to be stronger?
No.
In our responsibilities and our individuality.
No, I expect that you're not... I expect two things. It'll be harder, because it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. But it'll be easier, because you're not so prone to, you know, being capsized, you know, by anything that blows along.
Sure.
So if you're living your spiritual path in your own unique way, it doesn't have to be the way of other people's ways, but as long as you make a pact to say that you want to harmonize with...
You have it if you want.
If you want to harmonize...
You take the doctor's instructions. You can't make your own medicine, your own prescription. And Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, do like this, do like that. You want what Krishna offers in Bhagavad Gita? You do like that.
But do you think there is a lot of spiritual people out there who aren't Hare Krishna as well?
What do you mean by spiritual people? First,
people who are connecting with the source.
What's the nature of the source?
It's their
supreme being.
What's the nature of the supreme being that you're connecting with?
Yourself.
There could be a lot of people who know her. When they see her on the street, they say, "Hey, woman." But what is the level of that knowledge, though?
Yeah, that's right.
The deeper the knowledge of her, the more intense the relationship will be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, the more you have knowledge of what is the ultimate reality, the deeper your relationship will be. In Bhagavad Gita, you're getting the specifics, all the personal characteristics, so you'll be attracted.
Mm. And there's Chinese cultures and Japanese cultures that also believe in the same source.
We all believe that this is a woman, right? Mm. Is that indicative of deep knowledge, though?
Just surface.
Right!
Yeah.
It's not wrong, though, is it?
No.
It's just surface. So you owe it to yourself to get the deepest spiritual knowledge. Why do you always protest, you know, when you hear Krishna? Say, well, wait, isn't
that? No, I'm not saying Krishna.
Suppose,
you know, but I'm just saying Krishna doesn't, you know, under many different names.
Yes, I agree with that. So,
so, how many names do you go under?
Well, I mean, I'm Reiki.
How many names do you go under?
My name, Brett Davies.
Yeah?
You've got what, two?
You've got a nickname. You've got a nickname.
But which name is your preference?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Persons have preferences. Okay, even though you have more than one name. Basically, your questions are always about, is the absolute truth personal or impersonal? Because persons have preference. You understand?
Personal.
Yes. That persons have preference. You're a tiny person. You have a preference. Similarly, Krishna has preference.
Mm.
It's true. Krishna has countless names.
Mm-hmm.
But because being a person, persons have preferences.
Mm-hmm.
You have a preference about how you're called.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, hey, woman. Would I be wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Would I be wrong?
It's saying, hey, woman.
Yeah.
No.
Hey, woman, would I be wrong?
No.
But does it really, like, show me that we have a deep relationship?
No.
Okay. But not wrong.
Yeah.
You get the point?
Mm.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of the personal nature of the ultimate reality. Don't be afraid of Krishna.
Mm.
As soon as you hear Krishna, wait, there's other ways. Don't be afraid to take it head on. It takes commitment to take a person head on, you know. Haven't you felt that even in your temporary relationships when you really had to deal with a person, you know?
Mm.
It was easy at first to deal with them impersonally, right?
Mm.
Right?
Like, you personally, you don't know.
Right, and you just, you know, have a quick weekend with them. That's kind of easy, right?
Yeah.
But I'm sure at one point you experienced that.
Mm.
All of a sudden you realize you were in something deeper than you expected, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. It's easy to be impersonal, but when you realize you're face to face with a deep person, then your life starts to change, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, similarly, Krishna consciousness is full on because you're dealing with a personal reality of the Supreme Absolute Truth.
Yes.
You understand that? Ultimately, so many questions people have is simply boiled down to, is the nature of the ultimate reality personal or impersonal? That's why they always, but are there other ways? But okay, the source, yeah, I can accept that. Krishna, under many names, yes, but person has personal preference. So self-realization means to attune yourself to the personal preferences of Krishna, because the ultimate reality is personal. Suppose we said to you, well, look, any way we talk to you, it's all the same, right? How would you feel? Whatever we call you, any way we talk to you, would that really touch your heart?
No.
Okay. Because you're a person, right?
Yeah.
Similarly, if you accept that the ultimate source of everything is personal, you are bound, you're responsible to reciprocate in a personal way.
Yeah.
Okay.
One-on-one.
Yes, one-on-one. I have a responsibility to know of your personal characteristics, your preferences, your qualities, your activities.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, the true transcendentalist has a responsibility to understand Krishna's name, form, qualities, activities. And not just say, well, it's the whatever. Whatever you like, you know. That's impersonalism. Suppose here you are saying, I like this, I like that. No, it's whatever. You know, how would you feel?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not too good.
Right. Okay. Really late. Fascinating discussion.
Mm.
All right.
Okay. So, just on a
don't worry.
When you connect with Krishna consciousness, how does that affect your spiritual path, or the person to your spiritual? How's that related?
Connecting to Krishna consciousness means taking the path as Krishna gives it.
Okay, and trusting him.
And getting the results.
Okay.
Not blind faith, not religious belief. You get the results of a deepening personal relationship, which begins by understanding you're not the body, your spirit soul. And it continues in terms of understanding your spirit soul, part of the Supreme Soul, Krishna. All right, don't want to keep you from dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Thanks.
Yes, my pleasure. because you've been quiet all night.
Interesting.
Yes. Yeah, you guys gave me a workout tonight.
We'll see you next time we come.
All right.